I'm Dr. Joey Olney from Vancouver. When I'm in Victoria, I listen to All Good News all the time on Gorilla Radio, airing on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria.
Welcome to Gorilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM, cfuv.uvic.ca on the internet everywhere. Autumn comes again to Victoria, and as well as the changing colors in the trees, the fall also marks the traditional move indoors, where people can again get together and get active. But where some of us take the summer to recharge our batteries, others work all year round to protect our wild places, cause the rusting souls scheming to take it never sleep. Just such a group is the ever-vigilant Victoria Forest Action Network, who have worked for years to keep the wildlands wild. As their website, forestaction.wiki.com, reminds, quote, in 2012 and 2013, VicFans sponsored the caravan to Unist'ot'en Camp to help block tar sands and fracking pipelines. Surveying and clearing on the pipeline routes has been delayed for a year. In 2011, we defeated a massive and illegal vacation home subdivision near China Beach. Well, and it goes on. VicFan is getting ready to host a fundraising bash this coming Saturday, September 14th, right here in the Student Union Building at the University of Victoria, to further fund their efforts to stand before the bulldozers and those behind them. VicFan says it is, quote, 100% volunteer, autonomous, anti-racist, feminist, and fierce. And they promise all of the proceeds raised go directly to our projects. Zoe Blunt is a longtime South Island-based environmental defender and activist organizer. Zoe's past campaigns with Wild Coast, VicFan, and other organized manifestations include an attempt to forestall the so-called Bear Mountain development, the successful turnaround of Mega Developer at Large and her Ilkay's Marine Trail Resort, conducting activist nonviolent resistance workshops, and participation with the Caravan to Wet'suwet'en, an annual congregation at the planned site of the pipeline confluence for the controversial Pacific Trail Pipelines project. Blunt was also instrumental in convincing Vancity's ethical investment arm to disinvest itself of Enbridge-related investment vehicles. Zoe Blunt in an untamed cabaret for the Wild Coast in the first half. And itinerant book dealer David Ellis has spent most of the last 20 years traveling from town to town selling rare books. When a 60-year-old book detailing the construction of the first Trans Mountain oil pipeline spanning the Rockies came into his hands, he says, it opened my eyes. The book piqued his curiosity, so he hiked along the route of the pipeline, and what he found there shocked him. Since, Ellis has been a man on fire, warning all who would listen of the impending disaster the Trans Mountain poses to the environment, and he's already been proven right twice. David Ellis and selling the oily pipeline snake with snake oil in the second half. And Victoria Street News publisher, publisher, editor, and CFUV radio broadcaster Janine Bancroft will join us at the bottom of the hour to bring us up to speed with what's going on in and around Victoria and beyond in the coming week. But first, Zoe Blunt and an untamed night for VicFan and Wild Coast CA. Stick around. Well, welcome back to the show, Zoe.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Well, okay now, Zoe. How's your summer been there over at VicFan anyway?
We have had a rockin' summer. We did the caravan to Unist'ot'en again, and it was even more successful than last year. So this is our second year in a row, and we're still going strong. And like you said, they are still blocking the pipeline route, and the pipelines seem to be, way behind schedule up north. How about that?
Well, that sounds like good news from my perspective, but I don't have investments that I'm aware of in these pipeline companies. But with so many pipelines, Zoe, we need a program to keep them all straight. Now,
right.
Everybody knows about Enbridge and the Kinder Morgan is another one. And now the one you're talking about is the Trans-Pacific.
I'm talking about all of them. They all go through. There's three sets of pipelines that go through the Unist'ot'en Camp area, through Wet'suwet'en First Nation territory near Smithers.
So all of these guys are real confluence. And
yeah.
So you guys are being the bug and the butter here.
Yeah, it's the bottleneck. It's the choke point. And so because of the terrain, I think, of BC's coast mountains and the northern mountains, the number of routes that they can take between between Smithers and Prince George and Kitimat are pretty limited. And so they, in this one, 2-kilometer area, we have three sets of pipelines, 7 pipelines, I think, at this point. And some of them, in fact, are already approved. So, Enbridge is not approved yet, but the Pacific Trail Pipeline is already approved. And so that's the one that they think is going to pave the way for Enbridge and for all the others. And this is a fracking pipeline. Right. So they're obtaining this, the plan is to obtain this liquid natural gas through fracking in the northeastern BC, which is destroying water quality and land quality. And it's, you know, it's a dangerous explosive gas. So, the risk is enormous, and people have, absolutely pledged. People in the Wet'suwet'en First Nation have absolutely pledged that they will not allow this to go through.
Well, now, I'm a little confused now. I thought that if you wanted to get something going like this, a big resource project, and especially if it was traversing First Nations lands, you had to talk to the First Nations, you had to consult with them, and do you have to get their permission, or is consulting or faux consulting enough?
And the question is, whose permission? Like the Wet'suwet'en First Nation, I don't speak for anybody in Wet'suwet'en First Nation or any other Indigenous people. We're non-Indigenous allies. But it's an amalgamation of several bands. And so, they don't see eye to eye. Not everybody in the band sees eye to eye, but the people who are in the office have given their permission for the fracking pipeline.
Right.
They have accepted a promise from the company, but they have, like you say, they haven't consulted with everybody, and they haven't got permission from the clans whose land it is. And these are the people who have pledged to take care of this land. They are the stewards of the land. They have been since time immemorial. They have never been driven from their lands. They've never been conquered. They've never signed any treaties. And so they remain, it remains Indigenous land. It remains sovereign land, and they're not giving it up. So there is a division, yeah.
Well, I know that there's been some excitement there, too, with evictions. They were catching these surveyors in the dead of night and evicting them, and then they coming flown in by helicopters. This is all very Hollywood-like. Who are the people that are doing the evicting, and what authority do they claim to be booting these guys out, then, if there's not a consensus among the bands in this area?
Well, the Unist'ot'en clan, the leaders of that clan, have a responsibility to defend the land. And they have for who knows, hundreds of generations. And so they take that very seriously. And they do not consent to the pipelines. So they have put up a blockade, and the entrance to this area at the Morris River is a soft blockade. So people are allowed to come in unless they happen to be doing work on the pipeline route. And then, yes, they have been sent away. They have been presented with a trespass warning, which in this case is an eagle feather, and turned away and told not to come back. And then, as you point out, they decide to overfly the barricade and try to come in by helicopter, and they were warned again. And so the defenders are there year-round. They're going to be there all winter, and, this place gets 6 or 8 feet of snow in the winter. And so we're doing our summer fundraising, summer and fall fundraising, I guess, to help them get stocked up for winter and make sure that they have enough supplies.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about the fundraising. Now, I mentioned off the top there that the Untamed Cabaret. Now, what's this all about?
Well, I don't want people to think that environmentalists are humorless, militant, grim wonks all the time, because we do kick up our heels once in a while. And we do want to celebrate our successes. We've had a tremendous record of success for a completely volunteer group. We have, our record actually beats some of the big greens, frankly. We have a better record of success. We've taken down bigger targets than some of our colleagues. And we have a pretty fierce, attitude that we don't want to compromise right off the bat. And so, the Untamed Cabaret is kind of, that wild spirit, that spirit of no compromise. And that's happening this Saturday, and it's really great because Miss Rosie Bitts, she does erotic burlesque, and she's joined by a cast of stars, and she's agreed to commit herself to this show, which is happening right here on campus at Felicitas. So it's
just upstairs of the studios.
Yeah, here
right
in the Student Union, and it's this coming Saturday, and tickets are already on sale, and we're looking forward to having a really good time and raising some funds to supply the camp for the winter. Maybe help them get a new skidoo, because that's what they're using when the snow is thick on the ground. That's the only way that they can get around is by skidoo. So we have a full lineup on Saturday. So it's the burlesque show, the drag show, the live music show, and that's going to be Compassion Gorilla and $99, and they do sort of world beat flavored psychedelic funk folk
Yeah, I saw them for the, they were up here for the Big Trees, what was it, a Big Trees dance night or something. I can't remember the name of it, but.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. And then we have a whole list of performers, Vava Vunderbust, Florence Fatale, Jet Magique, Silk E Guns, Ella Love, and Tom Hatt is going to be the lead drag performer.
Well, that sounds like a gas. Now you mentioned to me off air that you had some tickets to give away.
Oh,
is that right?
Yeah, I did bring some tickets actually.
Oh, and so what? Two tickets or?
We can give away two tickets if
All
you
right.
want.
All right. Well, so
it has to be 19. This is an adult show this Saturday. Okay, it has to be 19 plus.
But you don't have to be mature, so don't worry.
You can be as long as you're over 19.
Okay. Yeah, and Felicitas is very sticky about that for reasons we won't go into here. But and Felicitas has just been remodeled over the summer as well, so it's actually a bigger and more inviting place than even it was before that. So now I guess what we'll do is a call-in kind of deal or something?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do it now or at the end of the show so you can answer the phone.
Yeah, the phone answering is always a problem because we can't hear it ring when we're on the air anyway.
Right.
So, what you want to do then is phone 250-721-8700. That's the number here in the booth, but you're going to have to wait until we're off the air, like when I do the music break at the bottom half. Well, no, that's not a good time either because I'll be phoning. So you're going to have to wait till after the program, and I'll repeat this again at the end of the show, and then if anybody has managed to bear with us for the whole hour, they can phone in and get a pair of tickets because that's a good value, and it sounds like it's going to be a gas as well.
And if people don't win the tickets, they can go online to wildcoast.ca, and tickets are $12 in advance. And that's for one, 22 for two. Yeah, and this is what's really great about Forest Action Network is we are totally independent. We are totally autonomous. We don't get funding from the government, of course. We don't get funding from corporations. We don't even get funding from foundations as a rule. So it's totally crowdsourced, and people really support the work that's effective. So that's where we're putting our energy, is at these choke points, at this pipeline blockade. That is a very strategic spot. They could have 599 kilometers of their 600-kilometer pipeline route sewed up. But if they don't have that one last kilometer, they don't have a pipeline. Mm-hmm. So we're here. We got their uncertainty right here for all those billion-dollar investors, those foreign investors that want to make this pipeline to China. We got their uncertainty right here.
Well, and you mentioned Big Green, that you guys are more familiar. Well, Big Green doesn't really, and I mean like the big NGOs, the environmental NGOs, when I say Big Green, they don't, as far as I know, generally get out there. And, Greenpeace does some banner drops and stuff, but for the most part, these guys work the telephones and mm-hmm. so forth. They're not actually out in the field, right?
Not in BC. Greenpeace sort of gave that up some years ago during the Great Bear Rainforest. And what we're seeing is more and more of these large environmental organizations are looking for working with, corporations, working with government. And, I'm not gonna flag them here, but, it has led to some very bad agreements, I would say, that have really, not respected the First Nations protocols that Greenpeace signed, for example, in the Great Bear Rainforest.
The Great Bear was touted as the huge, this was the banner success of this philosophy of engagement, where they say we do more when we're sitting in the boardrooms than picketing outside of it. But now the root of this Trans-Pacific pipeline, won't that inevitably go right through the heart of the Great Bear?
Yeah, and all of these pipelines are supposed to terminate in Kitimat, and then the tankers are supposed to weave their way down that very rocky, treacherous coast, mm-hmm. which is the Great Bear Rainforest. So yeah, this is a place where we have to fight. We had a moratorium on tankers. We had a tanker ban in British Columbia for over a decade. And, we never voted to give that up. We never made any policy decision. This is just something that Harper has decided to do. So we are going to defend the coast.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM, cfuv.uvic.ca, on the internet, everywhere. I'm speaking tonight with Zoe Blunt, and Zoe's a longtime South Island-based environmental defender, activist, organizer. She's had past campaigns with wildcoast.ca, which she mentioned, and the Victoria Forest Action Network, tree sits and so forth. They turned around the mega developer, Ender Ilke, the Vancouver developer who came over and wanted to do the Marine Trail Resort out here, out by Jordan River there. And And has been going up north and manning and womaning the caravan to Wet'suwet'en. And this is what we've been speaking about here. You know, and I know you said you didn't want to slag Big Green. And I don't know that I want to either, but I am a little confused. I talked to Sephora Berman, a few months back on the lawns of the legislature. I kind of buttonholed her.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her about her opposition, you know, to the Enbridge and all that. And then I asked her about the Trans-Pacific. Mm-hmm. And she goes, oh, no, but that's...
The Pacific Trail
pipeline. But she said, no, well, that's something else altogether, isn't it? That's gas. And there was no indication that they were opposed to this fracking pipeline.
Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what their position is, but I think the people who support us are supporting, you know, the no holds barred, you know, and we're supporting Indigenous people. And so these are the people who are actually leading this campaign, or these people who are on the ground blockading those pipeline routes, and that's who we're taking direction from. We're not sitting down with industry, and we're not making deals. It was disappointing that Defend Our Coast last year didn't come out and condemn fracking pipelines and gas pipelines and condensate and diluent pipelines and all these other pipelines, because they're all equally dangerous, really. So, that's what we were hoping for. I didn't see it. However, you know, we're going to continue on this campaign. I think people understand pipelines are pipelines. You know, whether they contain dilbit or gasoline or other flammable toxic substances, they are all prone to spill and to leak, and they all, you know, deserve to be scrapped at this point. And, you know, we have a real good chance of winning without firing a shot, actually.
Well, we all saw what happened in Quebec not long ago with this train carrying the shale oil from the States en route to be processed in New Brunswick. Now it seems that the rail transport for the tar sands oil and for these other fracking outfits seems to be a popular option. What about this? Have you guys staked a position on this or have a strategy?
Well, you know, I don't want to give anything away. But much like the pipeline route and much like, you know, other places that we've worked, they have a huge exposure. You know, the rail lines. And I've been really surprised that, you know, well, there's been a lot of opposition to the heavy haul, for example, which is bringing components for the tar sands up from the States. But these are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kilometers of areas that are vulnerable to being blocked. You know, they're vulnerable to being stopped. And they can't patrol hundreds and hundreds of kilometers.
Oh, can't they? What about those drones? I understand that drone overflights are maybe a thing we're seeing pretty soon up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, they would have to have one about every kilometer. I don't think they have the budget. And who's going to pay for it?
Oh, I think I know who's going to pay for it.
You and I. Oh, right. Yes. Oh, yeah, never mind. No, but they will hit a limit. You know, they're not omnipotent. You know, this is the thing. It seems like oil companies and Harper and the government, you know, are very powerful, but they're not omnipotent. They don't have all the power. We have people power, and we can and do, and people have all over the world overwhelmed oppressive governments and overthrown corrupt corporations. And they've done it, you know, and without, you know, even when they're facing very sophisticated, measures by the opposition. So we are every bit as qualified as folks elsewhere in the world. I think it's just a matter of, developing the proper spirit and the proper attitude towards taking this down, you know, preventing it. And like I said, I think we can win without firing a shot. Because it's all ruled, actually, it's ruled by investors. It's ruled by international commerce. And there's fracking fields and there's LNG potential all over the world, and everybody's rushing to be the first, to be the one that feeds China's demand. Mm-hmm. And the one that's first is going to take all the prizes. The one in BC is a year behind schedule. We're already winning. They're not going to tell us that. Mm-hmm. They're not going to say that. They don't want us to know. But you know, their silence speaks loudly. The fact that they just sold Pacific Trail to Chevron, I believe it is.
Yeah, well, Chevron too. You know, they're famous for their stewardship of the environment, most notably in Africa. But I think everywhere they operate. But so now the main counter to this, and you see this in the corporate press frequently, is, well, you know, what's with you guys? You don't want anything, don't you? See that our society runs on oil and petroleum. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to stop everything? Do you want to stop the wheels of the economy and our way of life?
It's going to stop. You know, it's going to run out. You know, and we're going to be seeing, things are going to get worse before they get better. And certainly we have the impacts of climate change are intense and they're growing. And, you know, it's a question of what's left, what's going to be left when we run out. You know, we're going to have to rein this in. I find it really interesting, too, that Harper is offering to make greenhouse gas concessions now in order to get the Keystone XL pipeline go through the states, trying to get Obama on side. This is a desperate
last-ditch measure, kind of an idea, though,
He'll promise anything. You know, if he was so concerned about greenhouse gases, we would be making those pledges already, and it wouldn't include a Keystone XL pipeline. Because that's just a pipeline to climate change.
Well, I was watching the CBC earlier today, and there's a business program on there, which the name escapes me. And there's a rather, well, a predictably right-wing business guru guy that hosts it. And he made the statement today that there's nothing, literally, quote, there's nothing dirty about tar sands oil. Uh-huh. And then he went on to say, and I'm a enviro-preneur. Or something to this effect. So he says he's investing in the environment and in the green. But what about this when you talk about the investors and, you know, and the investors rule in the final analysis?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any numbers on, like, you know, has there been capital flight from these projects, the Trans-Pacific, or
is
Chevron's just deep enough pockets to carry on no matter what?
Maybe. You know, we're going to be doing some corporate research, I think, this semester. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to know. But the pipeline is supposed to cost about $1 billion.
Right.
And so these companies that are, you know, perhaps putting in millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, they expect to not only get their money back, but to get it back with dividends.
Oh, and for years to come.
And for years, you know, they expect to milk it.
Yeah.
And so if there's any uncertainty at all about being able to finish the project, let alone bring it online, then that is going to seriously impact their decision to underwrite the project. And the project won't go ahead. So I think that's where we are right now. I think we are hitting, and it's amazing how a handful of people, like really not a very large group of people, they're supported by hundreds more, but this handful of people is really tipping the balance, I think, with the LNG, with the pipelines in northern BC, and we're really proud to be a part of that.
I mean, you know, in doing what I do, and I'm not on the front line like you are, Zoe, but I try to get the message out to the people that are at home, you know, the people that can support and, you know, both moral support and financial support. Mm-hmm. You're running now. I'm looking at your website here. And again, it's forestaction.wiki.com.
Wildcoast.ca. It's a redirect.
Oh, okay. Wildcoast.ca. I'll get you there as well. And I see you've got a thermometer, a fundraising thermometer. You're trying to, you know, this was the summer pledge-a-thon. Well, summer is fast out. I think we're finished with it almost. But this is this big fundraiser that we mentioned, this big event going on right up here at the university this Saturday, the Untamed Cabaret. This is part of the same fundraising effort, eh?
Yep, we are. Yeah, so people can come out to this Saturday to Felicitas. They can support the effort to stop the pipelines. They can have a really oversized amount of fun.
and you can feel really good about it, too. And, of course, Rosie Bitts, she's as well as the burlesque. She does all kinds of other stuff. She's an author, and she gives workshops, and she does all kinds of stuff. She's well-known around town. Okay, well, and we've mentioned now, Don't phone now, because that's not going to work. But if you want to win a pair of free tickets to this, then call after the show. I'll hang around and wait. 250-721-8700, and this is courtesy of Zoe and Wildcoast.ca.
I got two tickets here, and I just want to mention this is sponsored by CFUV.
Oh, great.
And by Focus Magazine, Garden of Eden, and the University of Victoria Sustainability Project.
See, all the best people.
Yep.
Only the funniest.
Right here.
Okay, well, we're fast out of time, Zoe, but what can we expect on the horizon now with you guys?
Well, I think we're going to be doing more organizing. I think we need to develop a curriculum and start sharing some of the skills involved with doing activism, with doing campaigns, with figuring out strategies, media. You know, what does the frontline action look like? What does Indigenous solidarity look like? So I think we can develop a curriculum and bring that to people, and folks can drop in and learn some skills as well. We're going to be at Power Shift as well in October. So two things coming up. The Anarchist Book Fair is actually this coming weekend as well.
Okay.
And that's during the day at the Fernwood Community Center. So that's going to be full of not only books and radical people of all kinds, but also workshops and discussions. So that's on the 14th and the 15th, Saturday and Sunday. And then Power Shift is a whole weekend for youth action for climate change. to stop climate change.
And who's behind PowerShift now?
It's a coalition of Coalition of Youth Against Climate Change or something like that.
Okay.
They are wearePowerShift.ca. And I think that we'll be sharing skills there. I'll be doing nonviolent direct action training and just recruiting, networking with people, finding out, having some brainstormings, like how are we going to stop this? We have so many options available to us, and we should use them all.
And invent a few others as we go along. The task is immense, and and as you said, the forces aligned against it are massive, but not omnipotent, and that's really well worth remembering.
We have all the people on our side, at least on the coast here.
Okay. Well, okay. Then again, it's wildcoast.ca, and Zoe, thanks a lot for all the great work you do, and we'll be watching the news and see you up at the cabaret too.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris.
All right. Now I'm going to take a brief break, but when I come back, I'll be joined by Janine, and she's going to bring us up to speed with some of the good things going on in and around the town in the coming weeks. So stick around for that, will you?
It's September. The 8th. Speaking now is Randy Carvalho.
This is Randy from the Friends of Cuba. Victoria Friends of Cuba. Reader's use of the statement.
Yeah. Hi, folks. Thanks for coming out in such a short time. We're always responding to the abuses that they try to throw us. While they're very well organized, we scrounge around to organize, but eventually we organize. We know that the overwhelming majority of human beings in the world are against wars and are against it, specifically to this war.
Sorry about that. That's a piece of tape I took at the Out of Syria rally. There was this Raging Grannies on there, but I can't find how to play that. So, failing that, I'll welcome our usual attendee, the Victoria Street News publisher and CFUV radio broadcaster in her own right, Janine Bancroft. Hey, Janine.
Chris, I was at a meeting the other night, and people brought up the something about Sombrio Beach being sold, and everybody said, "Oh, we better talk to Zoe about that. If anybody's on it, it would be Zoe." So
she's just walked out the door. It's news to me.
Yeah, well, that would be quite a blow, and it's Sombrio. Zoe will be at the Anarchist Book Fair, it sounds like, so that'd be a good place to talk. That.
Oh, I'm looking at the website. I don't see anything about that. That must be, how can they sell it? I thought that was a part of a park system.
I don't know. It might be something like what Ender Ilke did, where he was able to purchase some of the land and clear cut it. I mean, he wasn't successful in building what he wanted to build, but he did do the clear cutting, right? So I don't know. I don't know the details on it. But it's a good reason to go to the Anarchist Book Fair, and lots of good reasons. And in fact, the Festival of Anarchy has begun, Chris. It's exciting times in Victoria as the everybody's going back to school in various different places and ways. And the Festival of Anarchy is going from the 4th till the 15th. And the theme this year for the whole book fair and festival is defend the land, share responsibility, and create a future. So a few events that are happening tomorrow at 4 is a workshop called Effective Prisoner Support. So the idea that, you know, more and more of us are going to jail, that's the reality of it. There's going to be one person, Kelly Flugback, who went to jail over the G20 in Toronto, and she'll be in at the book fair. So the idea is to speak with some of these people who've been to jail for justice and, what kind of support is useful for these heroes who are behind bars. So that's at Canis Books tomorrow at 4. And then there's a free school walk September 11th at 2 p.m. at UVic. This is exploring ecosystems. So this is a way to learn about the native plant life around the campus. There's quite a selection of it, actually. There's the Gary Oak and Douglas Fir ecosystems. And then to talk about our relationship to the natural world and you know what all that means and that kind of thing. And so that's happening, like I say, September 11th, 2 p.m. People can just gather at the fountain by the library at UVic. And then September 11th to 26th, there's a whole other series of events happening in conjunction with VIPERG, the Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group, and they're calling this Disorientation Days. So, you know, UVic does an orientation. They're doing a disorientation, and this is a chance to kind of think about whose land we're on, the Saanich and Lekwungen peoples' traditional land, And so it's more of a radical welcome to begin the school year, and they're going to have workshops and film nights and open houses and social nights and a teach-in, and that's September 11th to the 26th. And one event they're going to be having is an Organizing Against Poverty, a community panel with some of the more radical anti-poverty groups, SOLID and the Radical Health Alliance and those sorts of groups. Wednesday, September 11th at 7 in room 110 of the Harry Hickman Building. And then there's a film called Resist, which is looks like they've actually started making it this year at the Unis Toten Action Camp. And so they're going to be showing what Zoe was talking about, this incredible camp with this handful of people that are stopping these pipelines. And that's going to be September 12th, 7 p.m. at Canis Books. And then the book fair, of course, goes all weekend, next weekend, the 14th and the 15th. All kinds of great workshops, lots of people, indigenous people from different nations, lots of different nations represented. And I recommend going to their website, victoriaanarchistbookfair.ca, and check the schedule. And then for updates on Syria rallies, I guess you went to the rally on the weekend, Chris, the victoriapeacecoalition.org. And I know some of the organizers are concerned that not a lot of people are coming out for that, but I think it's just that people are busy. I don't think it's people don't care. I think it's there's so much to do, right?
Well, there was one, yeah, as you mentioned, there was a rally on Saturday, it just passed, and the week before, too. There was a bigger turnout this week. I think, people aren't used to it. I mean, it's summer, right? It's summer here. People haven't got their activist hats on just quite yet, especially with the nice weather, But it was great. It was a great day. The grannies were out there and Art Farquharson, providing the music. And, there was about 50 or 60, maybe a few, give or take. And, people speaking and, I recorded it, and it's up at my website, pacificfreepress.com, and just go to the Guerrilla Radio, put your clicker on the monkey there, and you can listen to, it'd be just like being there if you were blind and had no other senses but your ears.
Well, the thing is, when we rallied against invading Afghanistan and Iraq and all the rest of it, those didn't start out with 10,000 people in the streets. They grew. And this is a really great place to go when these rallies are called and go meet some of the old-time organizers around town, Like the grannies and Art. I mean, we're talking decades of activism, really fun people. That's one of the main reasons I like to go to rallies is to, reconnect with some of the activist friends and find out what's going on and then talk about how we can what we can do, They keep just throwing this stuff at us. It was great to hear that Zoe, is confident that we're making progress, at least in slowing down the pipeline.
Well, yeah, let's hope anyway. But the Syria thing too. That there was breaking news late this afternoon that the Russians have brokered some kind of agreement that might give Obama enough face-saving room to back down and not get into this, what looks like it would be a real disaster. But the really good news is that the American people surveyed, even after all of the blitzkrieg of disinformation and propaganda, talking about what had happened in Syria with these chemical weapons, taking it for granted, as the CBC does, that this was a sad, using chemicals on his own people as they go on. That determination has not been made. Any evidence for it is being kept secret by the United States for some bizarre reason. But the American people are not moved. And in fact, they're becoming more intransigent in their desire that there not be an American attack on Syria. So I think that a lot of the politicians down there are really sweating bullets. As much as they'd like to support the industrial military complex and the AIPAC lobby and others, the people are, I think they've reached the end, and I think they've gotten to a point where the propaganda is just not having its effect on them anymore.
Well, let's hope they listen to the people. I mean, there's so often that they don't, right? And let's hope that the people then are equally opposed to whatever they have in store for invading northern Canada when the time comes.
Well, yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? Okay, Janine, well, we're fast out of time here. What else do you got for us?
Well, that's it. The street news is going to the printer, tomorrow, and then I'm on air on Thursday.
This Thursday, 11 a.m., Winds of Change, alternating, of course, with Manny Najjari's Hidden News.
CFUV, 11 a.m. Thursday morning. You'd be there or be square. And, of course, the Victoria Street News and, yeah, out on the street again with another issue. And this is, you're in year 11 now? Beginning year 11?
Well, you know, we're having our 10th birthday next April. I know,
Ninth year. Oh, boy. Okay, Janine, well, thanks a lot for coming on again then.
Well, thank you, Chris.
All right. Well, now I'll talk to you the next time then. Okay. So now, yeah, as Janine mentioned, I was at this rally over the weekend, and I did get a little bit of fun stuff. So here, I'm going to see if I can make this work. It played by itself the last time. Let's see if I can make it play on purpose. The Raging Grannies.
Go, Grannies, go.
So those people can sing. Do you have another spare hand?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
One, two, three.
Underneath the bombers, too far down to sea, live ordinary people just like you and me. Smart bombs or dumb bombs, Syrian will die and never know the reason why. The U.S. wants to kill them to save democracy. All of us have heard the rhetoric before. There's always an excuse to start another war. Panama, Grenada, Vietnam, two Iraq wars, Afghanistan. The U.S. has to meddle and be the great savior. None of us is fond of the present status quo. Sarin gas is just the latest horror show. You can't find the blood of Syrian sands if you rush in with bloody hands. A U.S. strike's misguided, and Canada must say no!
Thank you.
And so, the Grannies, once again, singing away to peace, perhaps, here on the sunny lawns of the legislature in Victoria. And there it was. And that was, last weekend. Of course, the Grannies, aren't they great? They're always showing up to, I don't know how many of these things I've been to over the years, and there they were. Well, you know, itinerant book dealer David Ellis has spent most of the last 20 years traveling from town to town selling rare books. Now, when a 60-year-old book detailing the construction of the first trans-mountain oil pipeline spanning the Rockies came into his hands, he says, quote, "It opened my eyes." Well, the book piqued his curiosity further, so he hiked along the route of the pipeline, and what he found there shocked him. Now, since then, he's been a man with his hair on fire, warning everybody who would listen of an impending disaster that the trans-mountain poses to the environment, and he's already been proven right twice. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi, Chris.
Well, okay, now...
Glad to be here.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, David, the Globe and Mail's Mark Hume featured your fulfilled predictions of failures along the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Just what is the condition of that pipeline right now?
It's not very good at all, and thank goodness for you and for Mark for finally picking up the story. The media has not been covering this. The line is taking a lot of what's called stress corrosion cracking. According to the National Energy Board website, these are areas that I've found usually next to streams or in areas of very moist soil for long periods of the year, as in the Coquihalla Summit area where they get 25 feet of snow. And it's, and I have pictures of this I can send to anybody who wants to contact you and give them my email. I will send you pictures of this heavily corroded pipe, which is exposed in over 30 spots now as they hastily try and repair it before winter.
Yeah, and are these just places that are so difficult to get to that they haven't been inspected, or are these areas that they know are faulty but they're not repairing them because it's just too expensive to do it, and they'll wait until they blow before they go in there?
Well, their method is to run a smart pig, which is an electronic device, through the pipe. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how to work. I'm not going to pretend to be a pipeline expert, but this gives them precise locations where the pipe is thinning or corroding. Mm-hmm. And then they go back and they dig it up, or daylight it as they call it, and put usually a sleeve on it. Now this is to hopefully before there is a leak. But what's happened is, despite this constant running of these pigs and constant repairing of the pipe or before it breaks with sleeves, they still manage to have two breaks, where it spills. And so we're obviously going to have, it's a declining road for this pipe. It's an old piece of garden hose, basically. And it's time to stop using it. But they haven't woken up to that. We're in for a tragedy this winter, and nobody's waking up to the reality, especially the prime minister of this land.
Well, who's in charge of the pipe? Who operates it?
National Energy Board is the authority that regulates it through the federal government, and it's their job to keep on top of it and to model to regulate it. And they have very tightly regulated and managed these two spills, and they put out the press releases about these two spills.
Well,
so they're the ones, National Energy Board.
Well, if the National Energy Board is responsible for the oversight, then who's making the money out of it? Whose oil is running through it, and who's profiting by it?
Kinder Morgan, the American company, owns the pipeline now these last 3 or 4 years, and friends of mine have said they're estimating about $1.2 million worth of oil is shipped through it to Burnaby. Every month, about a third of that is now Dilbit. Now, that's one of the big issues that's also being not much publicized. I actually only realized they were shipping Dilbit down this pipe from a Globe and Mail article just over a year and a half ago. It's not much publicized, although it is on their website. But without telling the public, they're putting the most dangerous, environmentally dangerous material. The last only two big Dilbit spills are proved to be very unrecoverable, extremely expensive, Kalamazoo in Arkansas. So Here we have the most dangerous oil being put down one of the oldest pipes in Canada through some of the steepest terrain where there's 25 feet of snow and no possibility of oil spill response in the winter.
And Dilbit, for those that don't know, it's diluted bitumen, but it's and this is the stuff that comes out of the tar sands, of course, but diluted with what? What is, do you know what the components of the dilution solution is?
I couldn't give you the chemical properties, although I'm struggling to learn all that right now. Mm-hmm. It has caused health concerns in the Kalamazoo spill, serious concerns there. The two studies haven't come out yet. It's not a nice substance. Also, jet fuel is shipped, diesel is shipped, and regular crude oil. And diesel and jet fuel are particularly harmful to the environment to be shipped down this old pipe as well.
Well, I understand, but it's kind of controversial, I think, that the Dilbit or diluted bitumen has a more strenuous, corrosive property. Now, there was a report put out by somebody in the States, it fails me now to remember who, that they say, no, that's not the case, that this is untrue. Do you have any idea if this Dilbit is more corrosive than what might otherwise be sent down this pipeline?
I don't think we've got the science to say that. What we do know for sure after Kalamazoo is it's much more difficult to clean up. They're a billion into the Kalamazoo spill now. And, you know, it gets into the Fraser and the Coquihalla River. It actually goes beside the Fraser River for several hundred miles and then across the top, beside the Thompson River. It'll be the end of our salmon. And this is the greatest salmon river in the world, the largest undammed river in the world for in terms of not just the salmon, but for water quality. We do not want this stuff in the river. And we've already basically decided as a province not to allow the Enbridge. And here we're still allowing. It's just outrageous to me we even allow this Dilbit or tar sands oil to be shipped down besides our precious Fraser River through our wonderful communities in the lower mainland in Burnaby and where there are many very, very highly concerned citizens, by the way.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, cfuv.uvic.ca, the world over on the internet. I'm speaking tonight with David Ellison. I introduced you, David, as an itinerant bookseller, and people might wonder, well, you know, what does this guy know about, you know, resource management and so forth? But as well as your current vocation, you have a rather interesting background that rather surprised me, at least, and not least of which is your master's degree in natural resources planning. How does that affect the way you look at these pipelines and the infrastructure supporting it?
Well, I think I have a pretty balanced and educated view. I look at it in terms of public policy, which I happen to be trained in, and that is we have to juggle these resources – and the forests, the fisheries, the mining, the oil, and we have to not make long-term mistakes. And it's just that the era is over where we can ship, to me, a lot of gas and oil over these long distances when our forests are so flammable. The Ponderosa Pine Zone covers a good part of the area where this pipe runs, the most volatile and now super flammable forest in Canada, with many people's lives and locations at risk. And, of course, our fisheries and our forests. The forests are also at risk of burning, you know. And, of course, our environment and our clean water. So the way I look at it is the fisheries, of which I've been much involved, is in the cusp now of being rebuilt after the federal government has just spent $25 million on the Cohen Commission. They have a whole set of new recommendations to install now to rebuild the Fraser, and it can be rebuilt. We have to, they're even bringing salmon now to the head of the Columbia, over the Columbia River dams into the Okanagan system. We have wonderful science on salmon, and we can manage and rebuild the salmon. It's not a done deal like they're gone. And, of course, our forests are in need of management, but they're one of our greatest resources, and so on. So it's a matter of keeping the big picture in perspective and not focusing on just one industry. Now, the industry has heavily lobbied the federal government to the point now where I find the media doesn't want to cover this. I just find it amazing how hard it is to get anybody to cover this story. I can't understand why. So I'm really hoping that we can return to a balanced and calm overview and decide what to do based upon the facts, not upon companies that you are lobbying and in some ways controlling our federal government now.
Well, David, we've got this rusting, hulking, decades-old pipeline, as you described, the Kinder Morgan, running, you know, over hill and dale and through forests and creeks and everything else, the width of this province. What do you suggest? Do you think that they should replace the whole thing with something newer, with newer technology? Or shall we just walk away from the whole venture?
Well, we've already decided not to build the Enbridge pipeline, so we should now, to be logical and on course with that, we should decide to shut down this one, dig it up, and melt down the pipe, and not put another pipe in, and not put a new pipe in. It's the wrong place. The mountains and canyons and rainforests are the wrong place for gas and oil pipelines. There's just too many other resources, which are more valuable, that we have to preserve and take care of here. It's not like running a pipe across the plains or Saskatchewan or something. This is fragile, very steep terrain where the pressure from the pipe in this place called the jump off, for instance, puts the whole infrastructure, especially this old infrastructure, under huge pressure. And we just can't do it. It's something that we did in the frontier past, but it's something we can no longer contemplate.
Well, and I asked my previous guest, Zoe Blunt, about this too. What about our cars and our trucks and everything? I mean, all these other resources, the wild resources are valuable, yes, but we can't put them in our tanks. What are we going to do about that?
Well, we can't subsidize this destruction of our more valuable resources for the subsidization of oil. Oil, price of oil has to come up. I burn a ton of gas, but I'm all for replacing it with something else. And we have to stop destroying our country to keep the price low. That's a false economy. What we're doing is destroying more of the economy than we're creating in the overall public policy view of it. And so we have to, price of oil and gas, especially in BC, has to go way up. Sorry, there's no other way to do it.
But
if we want to keep BC alive.
But if the price goes up, doesn't that just make it a more valuable and a more attractive investment opportunity?
No, actually, the consumption started to go down up as much as last year in the States, where people started to take alternative transit. But of course, the big thing is the other types of energy have to be developed. Tidal, particularly in British Columbia, is one we have to look into. And other green things, they will be the smart young people. They will find alternatives if they have the economic incentives. Like, my background is in business. I'm a businessman. This has to be not subsidized. We are heavily subsidizing this industry now with destruction to our environment. And one of the things that the Kinder Morgan guys will immediately tell you is that this pipe has a record of few spills. Well, actually, that just means a large spill is going to happen much closer in time. It's had 80 spills, smaller ones to date. But the big one, I predict, will happen this winter. It'll happen probably underneath the snow in the Coquihalla region where they won't be able to clean it up. It certainly will not be a world-class spill response. It'll be a no-response dump pollutants on it spill. It'll leak underneath the snow into the Coquihalla and the Fraser River. So I really think it's time to think about closing down this pipeline this month and throw out any idea of this crazy new larger pipe, which will like Kalamazoo, spill a larger quantity of dilbit or this Alberta tar sands oil in a shorter period of time. It's 30 minutes to ruin your whole province.
Yeah, well, and
I understand
in Kalamazoo people are moving away. They just say, oh, well, this is a sacrifice zone now, and they're just leaving.
Yeah, well, it's not been coped with on a national level. We have to stop building and stop subsidizing the fuel. It doesn't matter if it's profitable to some people and they have a lot of political power. That's not how democracy works. We've got to get on with managing the resources imbalance in this province and stop putting everything at risk. And I include the forests very much because they're very flammable in this area. And it'll be a lot like the train spill, which we had in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
The flammability and the composition of the fuels come down this pipeline are very similar. They're mixed at certain points in time, and you'll have some fireballs.
Well, and as I understand, we're still yet to find out what the chemical composition of some of the materials that caused that explosion at Lake Majestic. You know, that's a trade secret, I suppose, but they certainly don't want to tell us. I'm really interested, David, when you talked about the National Energy Board. Now, they have oversight. That's obviously it's a national institution, a federal institution.
Under the Prime Minister.
And it's their job just to tell Kinder Morgan to go fix things, or do we actually pay for the upkeep of this Kinder Morgan?
Well, the first things that surprised me is when they sent correspondence to the National Energy Board, they asked the company to reply to me, Kinder Morgan. So my first round of correspondence was with National Energy Board. The second or third were with Kinder Morgan directly. They asked me to do that. They said, oh, Kinder Morgan can do all that. So I was immediately, my first response was, whoa, this is not done in the Department of Fisheries, where I'm very familiar with how the governmental system works, where you pass off the entire thing to the private sector right away, or in any other jurisdiction to my knowledge. So they're much too close to industry, much too condescending to industry. And even though they have the technical expertise, and they know now, after this summer, that stress corrosion cracking is causing a big problem. Evan Volks, the metallurgy engineer formerly from TransCanada, has been helping me with a lot of the details of the codes and regulations and of the technical parts. But we need to fly over this line with the photographic equipment now, this fall. We're trying to raise the funds for that. And once we have that, we'll get that to the public and in this clumsy process we're now inheriting to the National Energy Board and the Prime Minister. But looks like we're going to have to do it ourselves, because the National Energy Board and the Prime Minister is commandeered by people who are very good lobbyists.
Well, I interviewed on this program Greg Pallast, an American journalist who, he had done a lot of work with the massive spill, of the Exxon Valdez and the aftermath of that. But he also did a study of these pigs that you mentioned, these devices that they send down the inside of pipelines, supposedly to check to see, to make sure there's no cracks or leaks and the pressures are good and everything else. And what he found in studying the pigs is that They rejiggered the computers on board these things to make them so insensitive that even though they ran the pigs down the pipelines, they were incapable of doing the job they were designed for. He explains it by saying that, well, it's just too expensive for them. For every little problem that they would find, then they would have to go and fix it, and that was way too expensive. So what they did, these oil companies instead, the ones that he looked at least, is that they basically turned the machine off, pretended to do the job, and waited for a rupture or a leak before they would go and fix it.
Yes, well, that might occur here too, where we'll have an oops judge situation, and you hand over $10 million and they'll patch up. The two leaks, the spills that they had, they put sleeves on them within 24 hours and the oil was running through them again. And they actually kept on digging and repairing the site in extreme fire conditions, which I don't think is should have been approved by the BC Forest Service. There are some areas where the province could shut down this line, you know, as you mentioned earlier, with human health and the problems of fire, particularly in rural communities where this volatile mixture is going, and also to do with the forestry and the protection of the forest and of the fire hazard of which they're in control of. But basically, there has to be some action now, and I'm with a loose ensemble of groups who are citizens who are in their spare time. I do this 15 minutes a day. That's all I'm doing, and trying to get some action on this. And we're looking to get some more funding and some more expertise to do what the government's not doing. And we're not having much luck, and we're not getting any press.
Well, then, how do our listeners, David, hook up with you guys to grow this effort?
Well, I'll just leave you my email. It's just davidellis@lightspeed.ca. It's very simple, lightspeed.ca, and I'll ship it on to who I can. These loose Pipe Up is a very democratic organization working in Chilliwack to deal with this. Abbotsford, Burnaby has the Burnaby groups are working very hard on this and agonizing over the lack of progress as well. And there's many, many farmers, people along the way. The First Nation people are extremely concerned about their salmon, and they're all looking for some leadership on this and some real answers to this problem, and they're not getting any, and they're really looking for the media to cover it fairly. And you know, this is just so great that CFUV could cover it today and get some word out.
I only wish we were the CBC, but you know we aren't. But I will put this up at my website, pacificfreepress.com, and you can go and listen to a lot of past shows there too. And we'll see if we can, you know, put at least our meager shoulder to the wheel. Well, David Ellis, thanks a lot for coming on the show tonight and sharing your story with us.
Well, it's a delight, and thank you for taking the time to work on this very complicated issue. It's actually not that complicated. It's just common sense is all I've been using, and then using that common sense, I was able to predict these spills. So now we need more support. So thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, common sense is the rarest of commodities. Until the next time, please, David, keep me posted, eh?
I will, Chris, with your email.
All right.
And you send me them. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks a lot. David Ellis at lightspeed.ca. I think he said, no, I should have listened. And also thanks to Zoe Blunt, Rainforest, oh man, I'm losing it now, okay, forget it. And Janine Bancroft and everybody else up here that makes things go day in and day out. That's all I got for you for this week. But stay tuned, especially if you're a jazz fan, because Arnold's coming straight up with Rhythmening to Rhythmening you into this evening.